It's been a bad week.
Thank you very much. Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
And welcome once again to It's Been a Bad Week, the show which says...
Bloody hell!
Yes, this week our first nominee is the English Channel. The things it has to put up with. I mean, who would ever have thought they'd let Maureen off driving school in charge of a luxury cruiser? Especially one called the Norwegian Dream. Bizarre name for a boat.
Anyway, welcome as ever to the programme which seeks out the people who've drawn the short straw and sorts out which of them will win the coveted Worst Week of the Week award, awarded weekly on a week-by-week basis.
With us on this fearless quest into the fuzzy end of the lollipop land are Ronnie Ancona and John Culshaw, who together will sail the ocean of comedy, Mervyn Stutter, who will be providing a hornpipe, allegedly, and as ever, we pipe aboard a guest judge, a person who will steer a course between the islands of woe...
Yes, that metaphor is sinking fast.
...and who will choose the winner of the world's worst week competition.
Better.
This week, that task falls to one of the finest comedy writers ever to have agreed to come on the show this week. A man who has put gags into the mouth of many comedians, including one or two whose mouths he should have put the gags over rather than into. Please welcome Mr. Ian Paddington.
So, Ian, you had a bad week at all?
Well, fortunately for the purposes of this show, yes, I have had a bad week, surprisingly.
Excellent.
And I can tell by the nice faces of the nice people here today that I'm going to get a sympathetic R when I say that on Monday our hamster died.
Aww. That's very sad.
Yeah, fell asleep at the wheel. And the other thing that happened was that I got a letter from the BBC sacking me from a show, which is bad enough, but in fact...
Was it this one?
I'm rather wishing it had been. No, it's a show that I stopped writing some months before. I just stopped doing it. And they wrote to me and said, you've been sacked. And so I rang up the PA and said, you've sacked me from the show, but I don't do it. And she said, well, actually, we sacked all the writers, but we didn't want you to feel left out.
Okay, so let's get on now with our first batch of Bad Weeks.
Yeah, and to kick things off, it's been a bad week for haute couture, because according to Details magazine, in the future, we'll all be wearing what they call smart clothes. Clothes, which are in effect wearable computers. Items under discussion include smart shoes, which have a built-in pulse rate monitor, which will automatically dial 999 if you have a heart attack. You can imagine the 999 operator. Can I have your name, please? Yes, I'm a size 9 brown brogue with a leather upper. But even better is a pair of pants, which store all your medical records in case you get knocked down by a bus. And store rather less pleasant things if you see the bus coming.
Where, do you think, in a pair of pants, would they actually store these medical records?
Label, possibly.
On a label, with everything else. Which is great, because people will then be running around A&E departments going, penicillin allergy, blood group O, no bleach, tumble dry. And also, of course, that means that whatever accident you've had, they're going to have to take your pants off to find your medical records. Which means every doctor is going to turn into Leslie Phillips.
Oh, doctor, I've bumped my left shoulder.
Oh, dear. Well, knickers off.
I beg your pardon?
I've got to take a look at your particular...
Oh, well, I don't...
I mean, there's things stored down there I really need to peek at.
At which point, Kenneth Williams shouts, oh, matron, and they go to the adverts. But actually, I think these smart clothes sound like a great idea. Although it is going to make getting ready for bed a bit of a tortuous operation.
Oh, I'm tired.
Did you lock the doors?
Yeah.
Did you switch off the lights?
Yeah, I did.
Did you unplug your pants?
Yeah, and put them on the charger.
Yeah.
Oh, remind me to reboot my internet socks in the morning.
Did you switch off
Oh, for heaven's sake, I've done everything. Will you stop? Oh, no, quick! I think I'm having a heart attack.
I'm sorry, dear. I switched off your shoes.
Next, it was a bad week for a family from Derbyshire. Now, they were off on holiday to Bournemouth and minding their own business in the slow lane of the M1 when they were pulled over and questioned by police. The problem, the four kids in the back of the car had written a notice which their parents couldn't see, reading, Help! We are being kidnapped. It's crazy, I wish I'd thought of that. When the children were asked why they'd done it, they replied, because we don't want to go to Bournemouth. It's fair enough, I reckon. Apparently all their mates were going to Disneyland.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, it was a bad week for the residents of Wincanton. They were being disturbed by noisy trucks reversing at night, so the bosses of the haulage company in question have changed the reversing noise to recorded bird song, which is, of course, so prevalent at night. And the residents now think that's even worse.
Yes, but it is a bit of a problem, I think. Those reversing noises are a bit of a pain. I know they're necessary, but you would think that in this day and age they could come up with something a bit better than just going beep, 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 beep. Or even worse, those very literal ones that go,
caution, vehicle reversing.
See, now some people, some industries, they are trying. Ice cream vans in reverse sound like this. And if you listen very carefully, it says, I buried Paul. And also, Tony Blair has a special alarm fitted to his car as well.
Caution. Party policy reversing.
It is a bit weird, anyway, choosing birdsong to warn of reversing vehicles. I mean, if you hear the melodious trill of the chaffinch or the gentle warbling of the lesser-spotted swifthawk, you don't immediately think, aye, aye, that'll be a forklift truck. Best move. No, you'd raise your eyes to the nearest tree and you'd get run over. So I would have thought that the best thing of all would be getting a reversing noise that goes,
get out of the way or you die.
Or maybe, another possibility, perhaps they could use celebrity voices. Now, off the top of my head, ooh, maybe just plucking one out of the air, maybe Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'll be back, being over you if you don't move.
Enough already. So,
I'll be back.
Ian.
Ing over you if you don't move.
Ian, which one of those over stories you. Is you going to
I will be back.
Choose for your first
Ing.
Candidate for World's Worst Week?
Sorry, I was miles away.
He's having his weekly Arnie reverie there. So which one of those stories? What have we got there? We've got
we've got ships in the Channel.
Yeah.
I thought that looked dreadful. I mean, it really did look frightening. Until you saw all these rich Americans getting off, and you thought, nah. And then these marine safety experts said, we want to have, like, air traffic control. We want to control ships in the Channel in the same way as we control aircraft. So isn't that great? You drive onto the ferry at Dover, you go to Boulogne, and your car goes to Dar es Salaam. That does look pretty bad, actually. In smart clothes, I can't take that too seriously, I'm afraid. In my notes about this, which I saw in my bit of the internet, it said that in the underwear computer is a tank top. A smart tank top.
A smart tank top.
If there are three words in the English language that very rarely go together, smart and tank top are them. I think it's got to be the ships in the Channel. That was pretty horrific.
Right, ships in the Channel.
Excellent. That goes through to the final. But we also have to ask you if you've got any candidates of your own that you want to put forward. Have you seen any bad weeks?
Apparently, researchers have discovered that Germans don't have a sense of humour.
And they say academics waste their time.
Absolutely.
That is amazing.
It is fantastic, isn't it? Germans laugh on average for 6 minutes a day, and British people laugh on average for 15 minutes a day. That's actually 6 minutes laughing at the same things as Germans and 9 minutes laughing at the Germans. And they've set up these clubs. There are 22 clubs with 350 members, and they tell each other jokes. I've rather sadly suggested what some of these jokes might be here. Meine Frau ist nach dem Indies Gewesten gegangen.
Wie?
No, you meant to say Jamaica.
Jamaica. Oh, no, I see. You see, my German wasn't up to it.
Okay, let's do that again.
I'll do it again. Meine Frau ist nach dem Indies Gewesten gegangen.
Jamaica.
Nein, Trinidad.
Yeah, we're getting it now. We're getting the German sense of humour. It's going.
I wonder how I'd go down in Germany.
That's sick, isn't it? Right, so possibly the Germans on the grounds they have no sense of humour, which I think may have come up on the show before, ladies and gentlemen. It seems to come up with regularity. Germans with no sense of humour go forward towards the final. So let's move on to our next batch of bad weeks.
And a very bad week for Jack Nicholson, because hot on the heels of the research, and this research pointed out that the French spend 18 minutes a day laughing. His data suggesting that this week they spent 17 of them laughing at Jack Nicholson's stomach, which he let all hang out on the beach at Saint-Tropez. Did you see that photo? Oh, horrible. close up with a wide angle lens. Apparently, it's a bit of a beer gut.
It's not a beer belly. I've just had a verander put in over the toy shop.
Toy shop.
The toy shop.
Yes.
It's a good one.
Good analogy.
It's a good one.
Now, it's been a bad week for lovers of literature. A survey has been carried out of the great books of the millennium, the literary favourites of the nation, or rather, the literary favourites of people shopping at Tesco's, because that's who carried it out.
Yes, now the idea is that these books will feature in a mural inside the Millennium Dome. Well, such a panoply of choice. A thousand years, from Chaucer to Orwell, from Shakespeare to Dickens, Britain's extraordinary literary history, one of her very finest jewels. So, what will be in the dome then? Well, amongst others, How to Build a Better Golf Swing, and The Haynes Guide to the Ford Sierra.
A Tesco spokesman, perhaps realising that these results were going to be the stuff of scorn, said,
"These are the books that people actually read, rather than those we pretend to read or wish we had read."
Yeah, well, speak for yourself, mate. You see, I would have said it was more a case of,
"These are the books that people actually read a bit of, if they've got a problem with a Ford Sierra."
See, I think that's probably closer to the truth. But be fair, if The Haynes Guide to the Ford Sierra is indeed a classic book, then presumably we can now expect the classic TV adaptation.
Why, Mr. Pedminster, I crave your indulgence, sir, as to why you lie thus prostrate upon the ground with that spanner in your hand.
Miss Farley, my apologies. I'm investigating a problem with my carriage, to wit, a tendency to misfire on cold mornings.
You amaze me, sir. Is it not plainly a fuel pump blockage? See page 34.
No. I incline to the opinion that the fault lies within the starter motor brushes.
Indeed. Then that is page 76 and more serious. But if you go to a garage, they will stiff you good and proper.
Indeed. Miss Farley, let me speak plainly. For some time now, I have wanted to fire your own starter motor.
Why, Mr. Pedminster, I have never yet received a full service and do not intend to begin with...
I see. I suppose a hand crank's out of the question.
Did you write that?
Yes, swiftly on. Right, a terrifying story from France. It's the invasion of the 9-inch grasshoppers. Huge, outsized grasshoppers have apparently made their way via cargo ships from America into Europe, and they have been spotted all over France. On menus, probably. Sounds like the sort of thing the French would fry up as a starter. But these menacing, crook-legged mega-hoppers could be heading for Britain if only they can puzzle out how to get past security at Eurotunnel.
So be on your guard. A normal-sized British grasshopper sounds like this. The American grasshopper sounds like this.
Be afraid. Be very afraid, ladies and gentlemen.
Saigon.
Once these American grasshoppers, or as they would call them, crickets, arrive, our homegrown variety, I'm afraid, aren't going to stand much of a chance. They'll be wiped out swiftly and mercilessly. But then that's the English cricket for you.
Yes.
Be fair, ladies and gentlemen.
The English cricket has no backbone and a very long tail. Yes. Do you think we could get a job on the Telegraph? Anyway. Now, you thought we were lapsing into casual chauvinism when we said last week that the French would eat anything, but no, it's not prejudice.
It's the truth. C'est la vérité, mesdames et messieurs.
And to prove it, mes amis, we give you the next item. It's been a bad week for the capybara. Anyone? Anyone know what that is?
Cocktail?
No.
Holiday resort?
It's a family of people with cloth hats.
The capybara. That's the worst pun I've ever heard in my life.
Just stick around.
There's several coming up later.
Capybara.
Arsenal's new midfielder.
No, in fact, the capybara is one of the world's largest rodents, if you don't count Jeffrey Archer. It lives in swamps in Venezuela, and apparently it's about to become a new European delicacy, because unlike Jack Nicholson, it is very low-fat meat.
You think you're funny, huh?
Yes, I do. But it's not only that. There's a very interesting thing about our low-cholesterol, rat-like, swamp-dwelling edible friend, the capybara.
There is indeed. It's a fish. The Pope says so, so it must be. What happened was, this is absolutely true, 200 years ago, starving Venezuelans without any access to the sea were going hungry on Fridays. So they asked the Vatican for a special dispensation to reclassify the capybara as a fish, and a fish it remains to this day.
Strange country, Venezuela. Children there keep capybara as pets, but they tend to drown in their little bowls.
It's very sad. And of course, every night on Venezuelan television, the weather forecast is read by Michael Capybara. So there you are. It's a thing that lives in a swamp, it looks like a rat, and it's officially a fish, and the French will eat it. It's a bad week for the capybara in so many ways, ladies and gentlemen. So many ways. Ian, which of those do you fancy putting forward?
I'm quite keen on the capybara.
I feel very sorry for the capybara.
Have you ever had one?
The big rat that thinks it's a fish.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson put a veranda over the toy shop. He should also remember that nothing grows properly in the shade. Tesco's books. I know nothing about golf. I quite like women.
Which one are you going to choose, though? Which one of them?
I think it's the capybara.
The capybara. I agree. I feel very sorry for the poor old rat fish.
Well, yeah, the capybara goes into the final. Now, as if the eclipse didn't bring enough trouble to Cornwall, this summer is proving very bad for local surfers. It appears that surfing is now so popular and so many people want to go surfing that there aren't enough good waves to go round. So when a good one comes in, people are turning violent just to try and get onto it. Yes, it's the advent of surf rage. Now, resident beach bum Mervyn Stutter waxes down his woody and hangs 10.
Well, you better grab your board and you better grab your buddies if surfing's what you wanna do. 'Cause it isn't just the waves that you're gonna have to brave, but the surfing psychopaths too. It's a bit like the East End meets the West Coast, the craze meets Jan and Dean. You'll be 6 foot on the turf if you try to nick a surf when Hawaii meets Bethel Green. Oh, surfing psychopaths,
sorry if the boys miss the ice.
Surfing psychopaths,
kill him, Ron, that's my wife.
Out on the ocean we'll be hanging 10, riding on the top of the sea. When the surfing psychos are hanging 10, you can see the body swinging from the trees. Well, the guys go homicidal if it's big and it's tidal on their surfboard killing machines. If it's 6 foot and glassy,
you'll be 6 foot and glass. Now we're all mine.
Well, if you wanna catch a wave, better do what I say. No baggies and no Jesus sandals. Just set out on the ocean in a threatening motion in Doc Martens and a pickaxe handle. Surfing psychopaths, see them tubing down the pipe. Surfing psychopaths, this pipe's lead, alright. Wipe out!
Get on, Mervyn. So now, on to another bunch of bad weeks. And I know you'll give me an appropriate response when I say, it's been a bad week for Jonathan Aitken.
Oh dear. It's been a bad year, really, hasn't it?
This week he's been accused of pushing a fellow inmate out of a cushy prison job at Stamford Hill Open Prison. He was doing a 12-hour-a-day farm labouring job, but now they've moved him to an indoor cleaning job that takes 20 minutes. Mind you, he's an MP, so 20 minutes is quite rigorous, really. Well, what really caught the eye, though, was the name of the inmate from whom he took the job. His name, Jordan Corleone. I would not mess with anyone called Corleone.
Mr. Aitken, I thought you were an honorable man. But you take my mop, you take my bucket, you take my toilet duck. I must say to you, you're messing with one of the most sinister organizations in the world.
Really? I never saw you at the party conference.
Hey! Prison authorities actually said that Aitken was moved from the job because he wasn't very good at farm labouring. Apparently he even made a mess of digging a hole, which is very strange because he managed it very well in court, I noticed.
Thank you. And he also knocked over some quick-drying cement.
Yes, he knocked over some quick-drying cement. Hello. What? And afterwards he was heard running around going,
oh, Mr. Grimsdale, Mr. Grimsdale. I've knocked over the quick-drying cement. Oh, no. Actually, I didn't knock it over. It was my daughter.
Now, it was a bad week for Scotland.
Who's bad?
Michael Jackson is. And he's paying a visit. Mad Mikey McJacko of the Mad as a Fish clan has gone up to Edinburgh. He's got up to Edinburgh this week where he saw a circus and he went for a Mexican meal. In fact, the whole family went, the whole plastic lot of them. Jermaine, Janet, Tito, if, I don't know if you remember him, he's one of the Yugoslavian Jacksons. Michael, of course, will have to be careful in Scotland. Now, that was actually the sound of Michael Jackson in a Glasgow pub. After demanding a macrobiotic fruit juice through a face mask.
In fact, it says that Michael's very keen on Scotland, and according to the same article, has advised Janet to buy a house there.
Now, why would he do that, do you reckon?
Cold weather, apparently. He's worried if she stays in California, her nose is going to melt. And staying in Scotland, it was a bad week for Jodie the Lioness. She's in Edinburgh Zoo, and things haven't been going too well. She lost her partner Lumpy in December, and has been feeling a bit lonely. I'm turning it to Simon Bates. But that's not the bad bit. The bad bit is that in an attempt to cheer her up, Sir Jimmy Savile went to Scotland and played her a mixture of African jungle music and bagpipe music through the bars of her cage. And there's a snatch of it. Now, this is a very odd story altogether, but it's from the Telegraph, so it must be true. But even better, it's given us a chance to use our Jimmy Savile being eaten by a lion sound effect. And we don't often get a chance to use that.
No, we don't often get a chance to use it. In fact, if I'm honest with you, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first time that a really good chance to use it has actually come up.
Yes, indeed. So let's go for it. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you Jimmy Savile being eaten by a lion.
Goodness gracious, now then, as it happens, now, Lady Lioness Jodie. Now, as it happens, I can give you 10 points if you can guess the tune that the bagpipes are playing. As it happens, I'm being eaten. Oh.
Gentlemen, Jimmy Savile eaten by a lion. Thank you.
A first on national radio. Savile. So that's Jodie the Lioness, a bad week if you want to vote for her.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe you just want to hear the sound effects again. I know I do.
Eaten by a lion. Splendid.
It's been a bad week for Labour Health Secretary Frank Dobson. Now, I know he's a politician, but don't worry, because this story has
no satirical content at all.
Yes, no satirical content at all. It's August, but you know the silly season is at its absolute zenith when a report in the Daily Express starts off.
Health Secretary Frank Dobson has been accused of spreading illness by carrying virulent germs in his beard.
Now, I know the Express is a pro-Tory paper, but that is ridiculous. Apparently an insider at the BBC...
Whatever that means.
Was it you? Claimed that every time Frank Dobson's been in the studio to do On the Record, studio staff always go down with some sort of illness immediately afterwards. One of the victims said...
Well, he visits all these hospitals. He probably picks up a number of germs from the patients. You know, all these infections are probably caught in his beard.
Now, I think what is needed here is a bit more research into this. When Karl Marx gave speeches, did all his listeners immediately start sneezing? Under Castro, half Cubans always got sore throats.
And is that why David Blunkett's dog was sick in the House of Commons?
Exactly.
So, we know the answer to that.
So, there's a fair old bunch of weird bad weeks there. Which one of that lot do you fancy for the final, Ian?
It's a difficult choice, Steve. Surfing, frankly, anyone who wants to go surfing in English coastal waters deserves everything they get, in my opinion. I mean, it's not really surfing, it's sort of going through the motions. Now, do you know, the funny thing about Frank Dobson's beard is that Tony Blair announced when he got in as Prime Minister he was going to ban facial hair from the Cabinet. But Robin Cook was allowed to keep his.
Really?
Which is extremely strange, because if you're ginger, let's face it, you don't want any more hair than is absolutely necessary. Now, Jimmy Savile, actually, I've got a soft spot for Jimmy Savile. You'll appreciate this, you guys, having served your time as sketch writers.
Yeah.
Because there are certain things, which John did a very good, which obviously I can't do. It's very difficult to express that on a script. I mean, how do you write?
How do you spell it, mean?
Well, I swear, I went into a studio with an actor, and not an actor like this, and this guy read, how's about that then, big O, little O, big O, little O, big O, little O.
John, if it had said big O, little O, big O, little O, what would you have said?
Well, you see, that's the sound I make when I'm reversing.
Who are we going to go for then?
Yeah, what are we going to go for?
Let's go for Frank Dobson's beard.
I agree.
Okay, Frank Dobson's beard.
Right. Okay. So right now we've got four finalists, I believe. We have boats in the channel. In fact, it was the channel, wasn't it? It was the channel itself. Idiots swarming all over it. We've got Germans, who don't laugh enough. We've got the capybara, the rat that thinks it's a fish. And we've got Frank Dobson and his germ-infested beard. Which of those, Ian Paterson, is the worst week in the world this week?
I think it's got to be the German capybara with his channel-infested beard.
So is that going to be the winner?
It is.
The German capybara is this week's rather bizarre winner! Well, surreal winner.
We're out of time, but next week we're predicting a bad week for churchgoers. Mobile phone companies intend to use church spires as transmitters. I sense prayer problems ahead.
Heavenly Father, we ask blessing on this day.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is busy.
And goodbye.
Goodbye.
You have been listening to It's Been a Bad Week with Steve Hunt, Hugh Dennis, Ronnie and Kona, John Colshaw, Mervyn Stutter and special guest Ian Paterson. It was written by Steve Hunt, Hugh Dennis, Steve Knight, Mike Whitehill, Sue Morris and Steve Cochran. Oh, goodness gracious. The broadcast assistant was Trudy Stevens and the producer was Neil Rosser. The executive producer, Dirk Max. Did very, very well. It's Been a Bad Week is a celebration production for BBC Radio 2.